Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
And the fact that we can't be proud of ourselves, like we tell our family members, our friends, our colleagues to be proud of themselves, why wouldn't we do that for ourselves? I think it's a huge disservice.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is leave a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is Peggy Klaus. She is an executive coach and the author of the best-selling book, Brag, The Art of Tooting Your Horn Without Blowing It. I confessed to her that I pretend to be humble more than I'm actually humble, and she told me to brag more. Check it out. Peggy Klaus, welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. Super excited to have you today. Excited for our conversation.
Oh, I am so excited to be here, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
A lot of things I want to talk about, but before we jump in, you sent me your book, Brag, and I haven't got to it yet, but I will read it. We have some time off coming up. Could you just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you're into today? If I was stuck in an elevator with you, what would you tell me that you do? What are you passionate about?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me start a little ways back. I began my career in the performing arts as an actor and a classical singer. And then I worked both in New York and in Hollywood as a producer, director, and talent coach. But while I had a good time, Joe, and learned a lot, I found that TV sitcoms wasn't really my purpose in life.
Yeah.
And so I took both my communication and leadership skills into the corporate world and have worked there, gosh, ever since, almost 30 years, helping C-suite leaders to first-line managers thrive in their careers. And along the way, you mentioned one of my books, Brag, The Art of Tooting Your Own Horn Without Blowing It. And my second book was The Hard Truth About Soft Skills, Workplace Lessons Smart People Wish They'd Learned Sooner. Mm-hmm.
Let's jump right in. You know, what's interesting, we've been doing this podcast, I've been hosting it for maybe, I don't know, maybe it's getting close to a year. And there are like themes that I would have never predicted among the folks I get to interview. And I'm guessing 30% of folks have started off in the performing arts, which I just find super fascinating. So musicians, fine artists, novelists, like that sort of thing that evolves to leadership, a passion for leadership. But I would love to learn your early like sort of ambitions and motivations around that, how it started.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think my sisters would tell you that I performed for them ad nauseum every musical on the planet.
Yeah.
When I was very little. I was an acolyte of musical theater, probably starting when I was five. But then growing up, I thought I was going to be a lawyer like my father. And then after volunteering for Ralph Nader in college, I wanted to go into politics. Mm-hmm. And then I thought better of that, and I caught the performing bug and added theater and opera to my undergraduate degree, and then went on to study acting in London and started my career. And what happened after that, and it was a real turning point, was the illness of a very dear friend. And during that time, getting to see how poorly most doctors communicate with patients and their families and caregivers. And that's when I made a pivot, left Hollywood, found two incredible physicians on both coasts. And together we created a communications program for medical professionals using actors as patients, simulating that so that the medical community could really have a chance to role play. But after a year or two of that, Joe, you know, them wanting all of my intellectual property for like a dollar.
Right.
I said, that's not really working so well for me.
Yeah.
And so when friends of mine who were climbing the corporate ladder on Wall Street, they called me and they said, can you help me with speeches and media? And I knew zip about finance.
Yeah.
I didn't know an analyst from a portfolio manager. But I did know that I could make these really smart professionals more interesting, more entertaining, mm-hmm. and more impactful to their audience. And that's really when I started my communication business and began coaching in pretty much every industry from finance to fashion, biotech, software, you name it, nonprofits, academia. And then got very, very involved in women in leadership. Mm-hmm. So that's what really I'm doing today and what brought me here.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see how you saw the felt need for that, dealing with it personally. And I think we've all been in the room. I often think about, I have empathy for, especially like surgeons and to have that, because of my background, sometimes I still use the word calling, but to feel like you have this thing on your life that's what you want to bring to the world. And you want to, you know, generally help people, make them be better. And you're judged on a whole skill set that probably doesn't bring like EQ into the equation a lot until it's all said and done. You know what I mean? Because ultimately you want your brain surgeon to do brain surgery. You don't really care but I think that's true for a lot of leaders who have sort of the technical skill set to move up an org chart really quickly, who are just really dynamic or super smart or super great at a particular task. And then suddenly look around, they're like, oh, I actually need to like have human conversations with people. And nobody taught me to do that. When you find yourself today working with sort of these high impact leaders, are there, I'm sure there have to be some sort of themes, like say you're going into a meeting with someone. I'm curious, like almost like, I'm sure it's not therapy, but like a good therapist, I assume you could sort of within a few minutes be like, oh, I think we're going to work on these things. I'm just curious what those often are. What do you see sort of bubbling up that leaders kind of need to work on?
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of people halfway during the first session will say, God, this is better than therapy.
Yeah.
Right. And I said, well, I'm an armchair psychologist, mm-hmm. you know. I never played one on TV, but this is what I do. And in terms of leadership, I work with people who are some of them moving into positions of greater responsibility. So how do they take that on? How do they shift in their perception and the reality of themselves, because now they're in a different position.
Yeah.
And working with them on what are their values, what is their purpose and beliefs, and how do they want to show up for people in that environment, which can be very difficult.
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at LeaderCast.com or the link in our bio.
That leads me to, I am curious about how you got to your book about influence and calling it brag, because when I saw the title, I was like, oh, you're like going right on the nose, right what people are worried about. Because I think in a whole new world of sort of social media and how we can build a quote personal brand pretty quickly, or it can be very difficult either way. But I think at any moment, there's always a possibility in our current world that people will take notice of us, right? So I'm curious, what made you want to write that book? And specifically, I would like to hear the story of the title. I'm fascinated how books get titled.
Oh, it's a great story. Well, let's see. I think it was 2002. I was on a plane from New York to San Francisco, my home at the time. And I sat next to this very lovely gentleman, and we had a conversation about what I can't remember for about 20 minutes. And then I turned to him and I said, well, what do you do? And the conversation came to a almost screeching halt. Hmm. And he answered me monosyllabically and said, I am a management consultant. And I said, oh, and what's your area of expertise? Technology, he answers.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, who do you do that for? And he mentioned one of the five top management consulting firms. And I was just about to go in for number four question.
Yeah.
When something just boiled up inside me. And I said, it's been so lovely to chat with you. I'll see you in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I reached down and I got my notebook and I started writing this conversation. And I realized that people have a very difficult time talking about themselves, what they do, taking pride in themselves. And I grew up with a dad who always was saying to me, Peggy, never brag about yourself. Yeah. If you're doing a good job, you'll be justly rewarded and recognized. And then Joe, you know, Hollywood, the tooting capital of the world.
Sure, yeah.
Right. And I realized I was going to be living in my car if I didn't reconcile what my dad had been saying to me and what the truth is. Took me a few more years, but nevertheless, so this was really the catalyst for it. And the title, I want, as you said, I wanted to get it right on the nose.
Yeah.
I didn't want, as I said to one publisher who was interested in it, but wanted me to change it to a softer title about self-promotion. And I just said to him, I am 48 years old. I've had a lot of therapy. I am not going to title my book some namby-pamby title. I want it to raise the, you know, hair on the back of people's necks, because that's the way we're going to solve this. And, you know, no, it's about the art of tooting your own horn without blowing it. There is an art, and you can do it gracefully. And I would ask you, Joe, if think on your very worst day when you think you're not being very humble.
Sure.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put yourself?
I mean, I think I know I'm hardwired to a similar background. I don't know if you're, this is what you're asking me, but I feel even if I feel like I'm probably being overconfident or cocky, it's probably not actually registering that much to folks. I think about it more online, because even with like this podcast. So, you know, I'll post it on my social medias when I interview someone and all that kind of stuff. And then I do think, I wonder if my actual friends get tired of me posting my podcast. You know, it's like, maybe I shouldn't do it on Facebook because that's where my family is. Maybe they're tired of it. It feels fine on LinkedIn. So I do have those inner conversations, and it's really not around what's weird. What I think about is I'm very proud of this podcast. Some great insights come from it, but then I start to worry about, are people thinking I'm just self-promoting to get something out of them when I have a relationship with them, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Now, are you going to help me right now? This is awesome.
I am. Good. I am. You might want to lay down somewhere. So it's interesting, because what I found over these 20 years, Bragg has been out for now 20 years. We're celebrating the anniversary. The people like yourself, who even at their very worst bragging, are not bad braggers at all. So, you know, there is a continuum, and people like yourself weigh in on the low end of the spectrum there. And oftentimes are ineffectually humble. Mm. And what I say is that at the other end of the spectrum is self-aggrandizing, obnoxious, braggadocious, that there is a middle ground. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we can't be proud of ourselves, like we tell our family members, our friends, our colleagues to be proud of themselves, why wouldn't we do that for ourselves? Yeah. I think it's a huge disservice.
You know, what's fascinating. This might apply. I think about, I have, my kids are 24 and 22. So, you know, now they're officially grown ups, and I can remember being that age and having a lot of ambition at that age. And in my early 20s, I would say, hey, I'm great at this, whatever it was, public speaking, improv. Yeah, I'm great at this. And then I got humbled, as the world does. And probably in my late 20s, I would never say I was great at anything, because I had enough failures and everything. And just, I turned 50 a few months ago, and I noticed to myself, I actually say that again. I'm comfortable now saying I'm great at a couple things and listing them off, usually in the context that when I'm stuck doing something I'm not good at.
Well, I work a lot with young people, mm-hmm. and I created a curriculum around soft skills for mm-hmm. young people, and learning the art of bragging is one of them, because I think that we really need to teach people from when they're very tiny to be able to talk about themselves, not put anybody else down, not be, you know, because the things that we hate about bad braggers mm-hmm. are that they talk incessantly, they never listen, they never ask about anyone else, they always bring the conversation back to them, they are condescending, arrogant, all those things. But I think we can teach young people how to be proud of themselves and also do it gracefully.
Yeah. So I am curious, though, as I know your attention or your passion at some point turned to sort of women and leadership and women leaders. Could you tell me a little bit? Obviously, you are one, but could you tell me a little bit about how that developed in your life, that the passion around that?
Yes. I mentioned my sisters. I have three of them, three older ones. So I'm the baby of the family. And so I have always been female centric. Mm-hmm. Love guys, but I am very devoted to women and the issues that they have. And as I got involved in this work, not having been in the corporate world, I got a very heavy dose of reality of what it's like for women in the workplace. The biases and the privilege that they don't get to enjoy mm-hmm. that white guys do. And so I really started to interview and research and create courses around that mm-hmm. because it really is a passion of mine. And I see so much of the issues in the world not being addressed appropriately. And if we only really use half of our human power, then we're never going to solve those.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you seen over time general progress, or is it still sort of the same as you saw early on?
Sometimes I feel like I am such a Debbie Downer on this subject.
Speak the truth, sister. Just let us have it.
I've been doing it for about 25 years.
Yeah.
And I feel that we have moved the needle, but it's incremental.
Yeah.
I think now we've got 10% of CEOs who are women. And there is still such a discrepancy in employment and titles and opportunity. And yet we have more than 50% of women are of graduating classes at universities and law schools. So where is the, you know, the stuck, as I call it?
Yeah.
Where are we stuck? And I am really a zealot about this, Joe, because and it happened for me in 2020. You're talking about politics. I do some coaching of political candidates. Uh-huh. And I did a survey of many, many women from the ages of 20 to the eldest was my voice coach at 100 years old.
Nice.
And I asked them, what would you have liked to have had in your life growing up? And every woman said, I would have had more confidence. Hmm. And when I got myself out from under my desk, I was so depressed for weeks at that answer. I said, I have to do something about it. Women have got to step into their power and into their life. And what are the things that are keeping us from doing that? Certainly the biases, the cultural, social structure. But it's also the shadows that I call them that keep us from really stepping up. And those shadows are imposter syndrome, lack of confidence, lack of courage, risk-taking, the inability to brag, et cetera, et cetera. So I created a new course around that just for women.
And we'll probably say this again at the end, but if folks want to, some people might be like, I want that right now. How do they take your course? How do they get that?
They can, you know, go to my website, email, let me know that you're interested, and I will get right on it.
Okay.
And get back to you.
We'll link that stuff to the description. I am curious. I probably can't help but ask this as a, as a white, older, maybe old now, white guy, with some, influence and, I'm curious what is your burning sort of hope or desire for folks like me that would like to be an ally in this cause, in any advice of how we ought to be thinking or acting differently?
Oh, I love that. And there are many men who, like you, are allies and doing things and promoting women and mentoring and sponsoring. So all of those things, I think you mentioned the word curious. You're curious as to find out what you can do. Yeah. And I think curiosity is really important for men to ask women, what are the issues that they face? To explore suggestions for how they can help. What they can do in their own lives, both personally and professionally. I know that with some of my C-suite folks, it was when they had daughters and they saw what their daughters had to go through when they entered the workplace that it went, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why they didn't have any idea,
right.
But maybe it wasn't talked about that much.
Yeah.
They're in a position of power. Who's going to talk about it? They've got a lot of guys below them. And women weren't speaking up that much.
It's a pretty common remedy for lots of sort of blind spots, right, of our privilege. So whether it's this or race issues, if you have someone that you're close to in your family that interacts with that personally, then you start to think differently on LGBTQ issues.
What do they call it, Joe? The power of one.
Yeah.
When you have someone close to you, you can see things in a different way.
Yeah. And we talk, you know, diversity is obviously a huge, hugely important, but also just a big now buzzword that what does it even mean really? I think of diversity, a component of diversity that probably gets talked about less is your actual social network and your friends. And so we tend to wire to stay pretty homogeneous in our friendship group, especially certain parts of the world and country. For me, I mean, my career started in Vegas and then LA and, in the performing arts, you're going to meet lots of interesting folks. Had I stayed in Ohio the whole time and not taken the 13-year journey there and back again, I think it would have taken a little more intentionality perhaps to just increase my own social network.
Mm-hmm. And traveling also and living somewhere abroad really will do that as well.
Yeah. I really have loved our conversation today. I'm sure you have important things to do to go fix all these people that you work with. thank you for trying to fix me today. That was awesome. I very much look forward to reading both of your books when I'm able to. You mentioned, I don't know if you have a website or LinkedIn, what's the best way if people want to right now get in touch with you?
Thanks for asking, Joe. It's Peggy at Peggy Klaus.
There you go. Straight up.
Really?
Old school email. Love it. Peggy, thank you so much for being a part of LeaderCast. We're so happy that you're officially now part of our community.
Thank you for asking me, Joe.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.